Omegyan Simranda Syagyanam Janashivadya Chakshuvinatanyana Tasman Shri Gurudinoha. So, two of the aspects that I wanted to focus on in this class, in terms of these pastimes, is attachment for Krishna. So by these stories, we actually gain little insights into Krishna's personality and into his nature and into the nature of his devotees and associates. And so it's like Prabhupada said, windows into the spiritual world. We get little glimpses. Wow, that's how it is, life with Krishna. And then the second thing, the moral behind these stories, what can we take from these stories and apply to our lives? These are not stories from 5,000 years ago that are irrelevant to us. They're actually very relevant. And we can make some connections that will help us in our daily spiritual practice. So starting from the beginning, we had a description where Krishna was glorifying his brother and saying that see all these plants and trees, they're all bowing at your feet, and how wonderful Lord Balaram is. So Vishwanath Chakravarti, who wrote that book that Kalkantapu has left in the temple for everybody, he was saying that actually the trees really wanted to touch Krishna's feet. And Krishna, being very humble, he didn't want to take on that glorification to himself. He didn't want to say, look, Balaram, all the trees are bowing at my feet. So instead, he took what he saw, and he turned it over and gave that credit to Balaram and said, look, Balaram, how these trees love you. And you can see there's a little indication of Krishna's personality of wanting to glorify his devotees. He doesn't enjoy taking in praise as much as he enjoys giving praise to his devotees and glorifying them. He also, it's really sweet how he knew the inner hearts and desires of all the plants and the animals. This should give us some hope that, you know, like Krishna is so concerned for each one of the living entities, not even just the humans, but even the animals and the trees. Krishna is also attracted by simple love. If you see in the pastimes in Vrindavan, there's not, it's a world free of all the complications of our world. It's a simple world where they fan Krishna with leaves that they've collected. And they take clay and they cover, you know, they paint things on Krishna's face. And they lean against a tree and they massage Krishna's or Balaram's feet. And these simple ways of serving Krishna should also encourage us. Krishna doesn't need something that we don't have. He just needs the love that we could offer him. And that's what the residents of Vrindavan are constantly doing. They're just giving themselves to Krishna and all the love that they have. There's a really sweet painting that probably you've seen where Krishna's closing his eyes and one of his friends is just about to put a flower into Krishna's mouth. Have you seen that picture? If you haven't, look it up. It's really sweet. It's a painting by one of the ISKCON artists. And it's a story about the cowher boys' fun with Krishna. So they basically tricked him, saying they're going to give him a sweet. They were eating lunch. And he said, look, Krishna will give you a sweet. Close your eyes, and we'll give it to you. And then when he closed his eyes, they put a flower in his mouth. And that it's such an amazing situation, like that we were able to know these intimate aspects of Krishna's pastimes. Like a god that would be willing to be tricked by his friends. It's actually incredible, the intimacy. And that's what we're getting, that's the experience of Krishna that we're getting through these pastimes, of just how loving and fun Krishna is. So then, moving on in the story, then we hear about the donkey demon, Dhenukasura, and his cohort of donkeys. And then the adventure starts. So if anybody ever has a doubt that the spiritual world is a boring place, reading Krishna's pastimes will also remove that doubt. Because you'll see over and over that there's just constant adventure and intrigue and plot and excitement. And a day with Krishna is never boring. So there's always something new. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that he is adventure. Do you know that verse?
I'm victory and adventure.
Yeah, he's victory and adventure. So The life of Krishna is always fun. The donkey demons, they represent ignorance of spiritual truth and lack of spiritual intuition, and also just being so absorbed in your material life that you're not even interested in spiritual life, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we can see those things in ourselves too, like if we have a disinterest or, you know, we're not interested in spiritual life. We can think about this story and about how Krishna Balaram twirled those demons around. We can think, okay, Krishna, just take that out of me. You know, just twirl it out of me. You know, so that's also the moral of that story. And I remember a couple of years ago, Kalakanta Prabhu, he mentioned a few things about this particular pastime that were different from other pastimes that Krishna had performed. Can anybody think of... Yeah.
With
Dhenukasura. There's three things particularly about this story that are different from other pastimes about Krishna as a general rule.
Balaram,
okay, so yeah, Balaram was the main hero of the story. He actually killed Dhenukasura. That's number one. Did you want
me? It takes place outside of Vrindavan?
Yes, it takes place outside of Vrindavan. There's different forests in Vrindavan, like Van means forest, so there's different ones. Talavan was outside of Vrindavan. And
the boys asked Krishna to go rather than Krishna.
Okay, that's a fourth one, actually. Sure. Yeah, that's another one. Okay, kind of in lieu with that, they basically went out to attack the demons rather than the demons coming to attack them. So in order to satisfy his devotee's desire, Krishna's willing to, you know, trek out there and go kill some demons. So, and then finally we get to the story of Kaliya, this Naga demon. So Naga is not just a snake. Actually, they're personalities that are able to change shape from being human to snakes. And that's why sometimes in the story it's confusing, because we see that his wives come and they're folding their hands and we wonder, what do they look like? Are they snakes with hands? Or so they're described as being close to demigods in terms of their power. And they live underwater in kingdoms underneath the water. And they could change their shape and become serpents. So what happened when Kaliya, he created this environment where the cow boys and the cows were suffering. He basically created a toxic situation. And they were really suffering as a result. So that's why Krishna got angry. Krishna got angry because his friends and cows were being disturbed. In this story, actually in all of Krishna's stories, we see how Krishna is the original of everything. He's the original environmental activist. He saw that, you know, situation. He's like, oh, he's going to rectify that, you know. Even the trees and plants were suffering, so... And he revived his devotees. They had all gone unconscious. Actually, they had died from the poison of Kaliya. And he revived them. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that... the Bhagavatam describes how Krishna looked at his friends. And then the deeper understanding is that Krishna was actually crying hot tears. So angry tears and seeing his friends in that condition. And those tears were actually... reviving his friends. So I was thinking about how Krishna cries for his devotees. His devotees cry for him and he cries for them. There's such an intimate connection between Krishna and his devotees. And then the acharyas described that he was going to every one of his friends and he was whispering sweet words in their ears to comfort them after the situation. Because it was traumatic. They felt they died, and then they were revived, and they're like, what's happening? So Krishna took that time to individually comfort each one of them. And he was whispering into the ears of the cows, don't worry, it'll be okay, I'm here. And he was embracing all of his friends simultaneously. So this is another wonderful thing about Krishna. He can do many things at once. He can do unlimited things at once. And... I always remember this class that Radha Swami gave where he was saying cowboys don't have to line up to be embraced by Krishna in this endless queue of cowboys, you know? They can all, Krishna is there for all of them at the same time. He's so personal. Similarly, Krishna is there for all of us at the same time. He's with us, each one of us. So then Krishna, he was really angry, so he jumped onto this tree that was on the bank of the Yamuna. And this tree is still there in Vrindavan. So who's seen the tree that Krishna jumped off? A few of us, okay. This tree is a Kadamba tree, and it's no longer next to the river because the river has changed its course. But it's huge and very, very old looking. And it was saved because when Krishna's bird carrier was flying over it one day, he dropped a little of the nectar of the demigods onto this tree. And that nectar makes you immortal, so that tree became immortal. And it's really one of the only Kadamba trees in Vrindavan, actually. So it's that's an indication of how old it is.
There's only one Kadamba tree in Vrindavan?
Not only one, I'm saying there's not many left, so it's yeah. It's not such a common tree there. There used to be more. So Krishna got onto this tree, and then he did his whole chivalrous thing where he tied his belt, and he got his hair tied back, and he was getting all ready. And then he flexed his arms, showed his friends, here, I'm going to go get that demon, you know. So he always wants to encourage his devotees. And when he jumped into the water, he also created the first tsunami. You know, like if you think about it, because the waves were about, I kind of did the math, Vishwanath Chakravarti was saying about 400 hands high, so it was, I forget exactly, but roughly 18 stories. So if you think about a really, really huge building, those are the waves that Krishna created just by jumping in. And the juxtaposition of Krishna, his description of being a really small coward boy, really gentle, really fragile, the coward boys and the girls are always afraid that he'll be hurt when he goes to the forest. And then jumping in the river and creating these huge waves, that's another wonderful meditation. Cannonball. Sorry?
Cannonball.
Yeah, cannonball. The original cannonball. The water was red just from the poison. So Krishna jumped in, there was this red waves everywhere. And you can just imagine the scene. And Krishna was very joyful and he was having fun. He was splashing around. And Kaliya wasn't present right away. He was actually in his kingdom underneath. And then he heard Krishna playing around in his water. And he became very angry. And his anger was increased because of Krishna's joy. So sometimes we find that when we're envious of somebody, or if we have a lot of pride and we see somebody else having fun, it can irritate us even more. Like what is that saying? There's a saying related to that.
The best revenge is a life well lived.
Yeah.
The best revenge is a life well lived.
So Krishna was having such a fun time, and he was so confident that it just infuriated Kaliya, and he wanted to really attack him. So then the whole thing started where Kaliya attacked Krishna and was like grabbing him with all his hoods, and then Krishna jumped on top and started dancing this beautiful dance. He's also the original dancer and the original fine arts person. So he started dancing this beautiful way to attract all the residents of Vrindavan. Meanwhile, back at home, the residents of Vrindavan, most of them weren't there, right? Only the boys with Krishna. So how did they find out about this whole thing? So there's two ways. One was, there was one main way that they found out. The demigods are always on Krishna's side, too. And so they started creating all these natural disaster phenomenon to make people aware that something was happening. So they started, the clouds became dark and started raining and started all these things. And then people were seeing the omens and thinking, oh no, something happened to Krishna. So they immediately wanted to go run and see where Krishna was. And they found Krishna by following his footprints in the sand. And then there's a nice description of how the footprints of Krishna are never erased by anybody. Everybody's always really careful not to step on Krishna's footprints. They want to keep them there, so they're easy to follow. So they followed them, and then they, Radha Swami was joking about how everybody started running to see Krishna, even little babies that didn't know how to run. They forgot that they didn't know how to run, and they just started running. And they all gathered at the banks to see Krishna. And when they saw him, their distress was unbelievable. They couldn't, unbearable. They just saw the life of their life dancing on the hoods of a serpent, and they started fainting, and Mother Yashoda just fell over unconscious. So why does Krishna do this? Why does he put his devotees in these situations? Have you ever been in a situation that was really, really stressful? I'm sure most of us have. And after effect, like, you know, just the endorphins and everything and just the intensity of it afterwards, there's such a relief, and especially if you see somebody that you care about in a situation that's very dangerous. And then if they're like rescued from that situation, the amount of love and relief that you feel from that is indescribable. So Krishna's creating that situation for his devotees. He's deepening their attachment for him and allowing them to experience even more love beyond what they thought. So just a few more details here. So when Krishna was dancing on Kaliya's hoods, his feet looked reddish from the jewels on Kaliya's heads. He was a snake with a lot of jewels in his head, and those jewels were red and they were reflecting against Krishna's feet. So his feet looked even redder than usual. And all the demigods were playing instruments while Krishna was dancing. They were chiming in, joining in. And Krishna was doing acrobatics on Kaliya. So he was jumping into the air really high and then back down. And sometimes he would jump into a mouth and back out. He was doing all these amazing things too. And just to create, you know, this wonderful scene. And have you ever walked on something really slippery or tried to, you know, even ice skating or standing on something slippery? Can you imagine jumping up into the air and then landing back down on these slippery hoods? So that's a real incredible feat. It's the Krishna doing that.
With the lotus feet.
Lotus feet, yeah. Kaliya, meanwhile, was vomiting. He was like purging all of this envy and pride. That's what was happening. So as Krishna was dancing on him, he was being purified of the envy and pride within. And he was becoming more and more humble. Giriraj Swami one time asked Srila Prabhupada, how is it that Krishna was simultaneously dancing on all of Kaliya's hoods? Because everybody was just seeing one Krishna, you know? And then Prabhupada responded, actually, Krishna expanded himself to be on each hood at the same time, but all the residents just saw Krishna, one Krishna. And he said, you're thinking of Krishna from your point of view. That's it. That was his reply to Giriraj Swami. So you can see how these pastimes are beyond our understanding. They're so, so amazing. Finally, when the wives of Kaliya saw that he was becoming humbled, then they appealed to Krishna. Because actually, they weren't going to fight for his life if he wasn't going to change his way. Basically, they were devotees of Krishna, and they were displeased by the arrogance and envy of their husband. So they were actually thinking, if he dies by Krishna dancing on his hoods, then he'll get a better body, and it'll be good for him. So they didn't come out. But when they saw that his mentality was changing, then they appealed to Krishna, please, please protect him, because now he's becoming a person that we would like to be with, actually. So you can see how the association of devotees is so important in our lives, that it's really the appeal of the devotees to Krishna on our behalf that can get us anywhere. And we want to try to become the kind of people that the devotees will be eager to pray to Krishna for. That we're somebody that they would like to have in their midst, and therefore they'll pray to Krishna on our behalf. And we're all dependent on that if you think about it, at the time of death, we're really flying our own plane, and we have to go through that experience alone. But the devotees are so compassionate. And you see over and over in ISKCON, like how at the time of people's death, like devotees who weren't even very close to that person will come and chant for them and be there for them. So if we can live our lives in such a way that we don't offend the devotees, but that we rather stay on their good side and that they're willing to help us at the end, you know, that's then we might be successful in this life to reach Krishna. Another lesson from this story of Kaliya is, or another, you could say, analogy, is that Kaliya was filled with pride and envy. And similarly, we can see that in our lives, in our hearts. I can see that in my heart, that the pride and envy. And in our daily chanting of japa, we can remember this pastime. And we can think of our tongue being that serpent of envy and pride, and how easily we can use our tongue to hurt others or say things that make people feel bad. And we could pray to Krishna to dance on our tongues in his form of the holy name and pray that he'll remove that envy and pride from us as we're chanting. So then our whole japa becomes similar to this pastime, really, where Krishna, the holy name, is purifying us until we become humbled. And when we're fully humbled, then Krishna gives us all his mercy. And Lord Chaitanya's prayer of Trinadapi Sunichena, and, you know, in that mood of becoming more humble than a blade of grass, that's the mood we need to chant in. And we'll see the results of that kind of chanting. And then finally, at the end of this passage, this chapter, it's been a really busy day for the residents here. At the end, there's, after that whole situation with Kaliya, then they're thinking, okay, finally we're going to rest, and then suddenly there's a forest fire, you know. And it was one of the residents, or one of the friends of Kaliya, who was taking revenge. Krishna swallowed that fire, and that fire, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that fire as being the fire of dissension between different groups, particularly between different groups of devotees and different sampradayas. So for us, we could meditate on that story and think how we could be very gracious towards different kinds of devotees. It doesn't necessarily mean that we have to agree with everything that different devotees believe in or their philosophies. We can stay very loyal to the sampradaya, the person who brought us to the dance, Srila Prabhupada, but at the same time being very appreciative towards every devotee of Krishna and not creating unnecessary waves or dissension. So those were some of the thoughts I had, and if there's any thoughts that you want to share or if you have any questions, then.
Each of the demons represents an anarcha. How does learning about the demons, Krishna consciousness, actually free us from the anarcha? What's the mechanism? How does that actually happen?
Like a scientific.
Yeah, how do we get free from the
anarcha? Okay, just by hearing the story. I guess my immediate response would be that just by hearing about how Krishna defeated that demon, we're kind of being able to enter that pastime. And so the demon within us that's also there is simultaneously being purified by Krishna as we're hearing about Krishna. So whenever you hear about Krishna, you're immediately bringing him into that situation. And his actions are acting on you as well. So for example, if you're hearing Bhagavad Gita and you're hearing Krishna's words to Arjuna, those words are simultaneously purifying you, just as they purified Arjuna's doubts. Give a more definitive answer to that.
Just remember that verse from the Gita, Janma Karma Chamedivyam, one who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities will not take birth again. So just understanding is itself the process. It's a counterintuitive phenomenon. You know, we usually think we understand something and therefore we act accordingly. But just the understanding of these topics itself is purifying.
And I think it's even more purifying if you're able to see that within yourself and say, Krishna, please remove that from me too. So if you're able to turn the pastimes into prayer, then it's even more powerful.
You gave a really good example for the answer to that question too, in how our tongues are like snakes and Krishna dances on them, and it allows us to personify our anardas instead of them being like these impersonal qualities that we don't know how they got there, what they're doing, or what their motivation is. We can personify them and, you know, really view them as this demonic in nature, and then, I guess, it's easier to visualize, I guess, the purification process.
Yeah, it makes it more real too, and the stories become more applicable to us. So if we feel a twinge of pride or if we feel a twinge of envy in our hearts, then we can immediately say, Krishna, you who dances on Kaliya, please remove that from me too. Like I also, and then you can remember the pastime, and everything becomes interlinked rather than separate. Like, oh, here are the stories, here's my problem, and here's, prayer. But like they can all be blended together nicely.
Thank you very much.